The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Our chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. If anything goes wrong on this show, it's his fault and his fault alone. He gets it done. He sails the ship right into the rocks. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their ongoing support. We have Ann Myers Drysdale with us today. Ann Myers Drysdale, if we're talking about Hall of Fame, yep, she's already there. She was drafted by an NBA team. Yep, that happened. She is the Mount Rushmore of women's basketball and basketball in general. You have to put Annie up there. She is in Cleveland where it's snowing, and she's doing the Suns game tonight on television. I want to have Annie on about Caitlin Clark, the growth of women's basketball, women's sports, the Suns this season, since she does Suns games, Mercury, and a lot more. We will chop it up, as we like to say, with Ann Myers Drysdale. John Wilner, every Monday, Wilner Hotline. None better in covering the college game than John Wilner, inside and out. This is the final week of the Pac-12 as we know it. Yeah, there's other sports, but they don't move the meter nearly as well as football or basketball. So we're going to talk with John about the Pac-12 tournament and all of that that is coming up. Speaking of the Pac-12 and the WAC, Jordan Hamm from Sports 360 will be in Vegas covering both GCU, U of A, and Arizona State as long as ASU is there, which will probably be just one day the way things are going. That's that on the housekeeping front. I had a great weekend. One of my kids moved back home. You guys know this if you're in the empty nesting stage. If you're like, I don't know, north of 45, maybe you're in an empty nesting stage. If you're below 45, one day you're going to be in this space. It's fun to help pack them up and get them out. Please go. And then the youngest one comes home or came home Friday night from college. And he is here, and he is doing what any college freshman should do, which is just lay around and be a load. But it's good to see him. And sports-wise, I watched Caitlin Clark yesterday morning. It's like 80 degrees, 75, 80 degrees, and I'm that dude that's, yeah, you know what? I can watch Bay Hill. I watch some golf. I think I'm going to watch Caitlin Clark. And I want to start the conversation hear about things I'm seeing around town and just on a national space. Women's basketball was viewed as something that you could not talk about in sports talk radio back in the day. When I first broke into this back in the mid-80s, you just didn't do it. And I was tilting my head and be like, well, why not? I get kind of tired of talking about backup linebackers and all of that, or other sports for that matter. Why are we supposed to stay away from women's sports? And then I came over to Phoenix and I get hired by KTAR and I'm doing my nightly show. And a couple weeks in, I put Paula Bovin on the air. And I had someone walk down the hall and management. Why are you putting a woman on a sports talk show? Because she's really good. She knows her bleep. So, and Paula, of course, as we know, knows her stuff and has been a fixture in the Valley landscape. Ann Myers Drysdale, here's somebody that John Wooden poured into. Annie's brother, David Myers, back in the day was a hell of a basketball player, and Annie's done a ton. So in the last few weeks, as Caitlin Clark has exploded on the scene, I see guys that sit on sets and they go back only as far. They don't even go back to Cheryl Miller or Nancy Lieberman. They go back to Diana Taurasi, as they should. But they don't go any further than that. And when I see Ann Myers Drysdale and everything that she's done for the women's game and how good she is and how good she was, give me another woman who was drafted by an NBA team. Just waiting. I found watching the women's game to be actually a little bit more enjoyable than the men's for the first time. I think it's because the stars, and I'm going to talk to Wilner about this too. I think it's because the stars, give me the stars in the men's game in college basketball. You're going to go with Zach Edey at Purdue. And after that, unless you really are into it day in and day out, which is like this many people, the common average person who's going to do their jobs and all that stuff doesn't look across the fruited plain and know about Caleb Love and the job that he's done at U of A. They don't. And so what I see on the women's side, the growth of it, and just the, if it's Juju Watkins over at USC or Brink up at Stanford, or Caitlin Clark doing what she's doing at Iowa, or Reese at LSU. The women's game, if we remember just a few years back, it was the bench press and a couple of box lunches that the NCAA had set up for the girls, and the guys had everything going on for them. And after that, things took off. It was the University of Oregon that raised hell about it. And so it's this week, with it being a lot of March Madness now here, I look at just the growth of the women's sport and just women's sports in general. We started doing this in 2015. I told the team, we're going to do a spot. We're going to call Women in Sports. I don't really care much for the title, but it's just like, guys, let's get after it. And we do okay. There's times where we could do better. We should do better. And just look at a story and say, okay, it's NFL Monday, as every Monday is in the month of March. And no, you know what? I'll get to it. I'm actually a little bit more interested in what's going on in the basketball. And then actually with what happened with South Carolina and LSU yesterday and Caitlin Clark, yeah, that's where I'm going to go. That was the thing that caught me most. You know, I don't know on the men's side if U of A is going to make it as the number one seed. The loss that they had to Oregon State was a quad three loss. This isn't bashing, oh, he's just ripping on U of A. Oh, my God. No, those days are gone. That's old school. This is just flat metric. Whether I agree with the metric or not, when you lose to USC and you have that loss to Oregon State sitting there on your resume, that's not good. It's not. So for U of A, they've got to go win the championship in Las Vegas. Vegas will turn into Tucson North this week. It will. My daughter-in-law is a huge U of A fan. We all have our hangups, and she just can't wait to go to Vegas. I've told her, like, you need to go to Vegas and just take it in, because wherever you go, it's red and blue. It just is. The Suns. See, I think going to the Suns and talking about anything is just kind of mind-numbing when it all comes back to, is Devin Booker going to be healthy? Everything comes back to, like, I do think they miss Josh Okogie. I do believe that. When I watch them play, I see a drop-off where he could be out on the floor. So I could go deeper, but it all comes back to, like, does Kevin Durant want to be taking 20, 30 shots a game? I don't know. You have Devin Booker doing what he does, and he's not out on the floor. Obviously, it's a different team. And that's, it's really simple. Like, peeling back the onion and just talking about health isn't fun, but that's what is going on here. I don't know if this team's going to get healthy. I don't know if this team's going to figure it out in 18 games. I don't know if that's possible. I believe it is. But it all comes back to health, and that's it. Pretty simple. They play Cleveland tonight. Cleveland's got a bunch of no-names that are playing really well. That team is usually one that is in the bottom feeder, but they've built themselves back up. Darius Garland's playing terrific, and looking forward to seeing that game tonight. In the NFL, the calendar is now changing. This is the tampering period. And when quarterbacks come up, like Mac Jones being given away for a bag of rocks just to go back up Trevor Lawrence, down in Jacksonville, that New England moves on. Kirk Cousins probably going to move on. Baker Mayfield is staying in Tampa Bay. So the quarterback stuff is starting to shift around. Our hometown heroes on the gridiron here, let's see what they end up doing. Last year they did, I felt like, and that there's competence with Monty Austin for it, so let's just see. Let's just see the direction that they go. And what's going to happen throughout the NFC West? Is there going to be a shift? Are there going to be players because of salary implications long-term in San Francisco that are moved on? A lot of conversation in the agent world that Debo Samuel is going to get moved on from San Francisco. We'll see. We'll see. Diamondback's about halfway through spring training. We produce a spring train. We produce four TV shows a week along with this and the website. We do a lot. And one of the spring one of the shows we produce is a spring training show that's been picked up in 9 markets nationally. And Jordan Spurgeon's been a big part of it from our team. He and I are going to head out to Texas this week to the Rangers in Surprise and do something with Bruce Bochy for that show. And then we'll put it up on the site. I watched the Oscars last night. Actually liked the 4 o'clock start time. I liked how it ended at 7:30. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was great. I thought that Oppenheimer was the big winner. I loved watching Oppenheimer, loved seeing it again. Al Pacino didn't do a great job of saying best picture, but it's Al Pacino, so I'm not going to complain about it. I like seeing Billie Eilish and her brother sing. Emma Stone is Emma Stone. Just there's a lot of fun in the entertainment business. And there were some nice nods last night. I think some nods where you get choked up when someone is winning best documentary, and we love doing documentaries here. And he says, I wish that we didn't even do this documentary because he's from the Ukraine. That didn't choke you up. I don't know. I got choked up on that. I just thought that was tremendous. Very insightful. And just the overall fun of it. It was a good show. And the Oscars did deliver last night. There was not a dud there. Ann Myers-Drysdale, she comes up next. And we're going to chop it up with Annie. And then the great John Wilner. I'm Brad Sussmat. Right. Annie Myers-Drysdale is on the Mount Rushmore basketball. I have said this in the past. I have said this the last couple of weeks when I hear everything about Caitlin Clark, which is terrific. I had to get Annie on to talk about the Suns. She is in Cleveland joining us today. Of course, my love of the women's basketball game goes from coaching my daughters the day Jerry Colangelo called and said, I want you to be the voice of the Mercury when they first start back in 1997. Followed them ever since. But that is the layup. The Basketball Hall of Famer Annie Myers-Drysdale joins us from beautiful Cleveland with the sun.
Good morning, Brad.
Annie, it's good to see you. How is Cleveland?
You too.
How's Cleveland?
Snowy.
Oof.
So I'm good. Snowy. We leave right after the game and go to Boston.
And it'll be snowy in Boston. Maybe.
We don't know yet.
Don't know yet. What do you think of the team? Let's start with this, with the Suns, because you're there. What do you make out of where they are right now as we're now coming to the finish line? 18 games left, I believe, in the regular season. What do you see, Annie?
Well, certainly the injuries have been a big bugaboo for the team. There's no question. You know, Devin's been out in this last three games, and he's missed 14 overall. We know KD's missed a few games. Beal's missed so many games. Nurkic missed a few games. Gordon's out again. Okogie, I think we miss him a lot. Grayson Allen hasn't missed many, but he's missed a few. So, you know, I think it's really been hard for Frank Vogel to kind of get a system go or the continuity going, and everybody trying to figure out what their role is and so forth. And when Booker comes back, things are going to change again. So Bradley Beal is starting to play well. Grayson Allen didn't shoot the ball well the last game, but he's been shooting the ball well the last few games. So we know what he's capable of doing. And this team is really talented. There's no question. And, you know, we've got to get more production from the bench. Bol Bol is starting to play well and getting minutes. And, you know, you're just waiting for everybody to be on the same page. And it's been really hard for Frank Vogel and his staff.
What's it like for you on a broadcast game day when you know that the full deck of cards isn't going to be there for the team? And you know you've seen, what, a handful of games you've done this year, you and Kevin Ray, have probably had maybe a handful of games where you've seen the complete deck. So when you go into these games, Annie, in preparation, and you're like, yeah, they don't have Devin Booker, and I have to reiterate that to the audience over and over and over during the broadcast, how do you go about preparation when you know it's not the complete team?
Well, you prepare for every game the same way. And my belief, as long as I've been a player and GM and watching the games and broadcasting, I believe every game we're going to go in and win. I mean, I truly believe that. And the Phoenix Suns have as good a chance as anybody to win the game that night, even if they're missing players. As you well know, that throughout the league this whole year, every team has gone through that. But on any given night, you get hot, somebody gets injured, somebody gets in foul trouble. You have an opportunity to win every night. And I think just putting themselves in a position, the Suns, to have that opportunity not only to win but to be in the playoffs is huge.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like there's a certain number of games they do all have to be together? Like, Brad, if they're not all together before they get to the playoffs, this is going to be a bit of a rough ride, or does that not matter?
I think with the Suns that You yeah. want to get everybody healthy. There's no question. Everybody's always playing hurt, you know. But I think that once they get their rhythm going, and you know, as long as I've been around the game, every time the All-Star game comes around, you hear every player and every coach saying, we're still trying to get our chemistry. Mm-hmm. And that's in February. Mm-hmm. And so it's been hard to get the chemistry and everybody's role defined. And certainly when Devin comes back, I think that, you know, he's going to want to get right back into the groove and so forth. And everybody's got to try and find out who's going to get the shots and where they're going to come from. So you have to adjust your game. And absolutely, there's no question. I think we have an opportunity in the last 18 games to really do well. And 12 of those games are going to be against, you know, road games. And we finish up against West Coast teams. You know, we played New Orleans twice. We played the Clippers twice. We're going to play Sac, who's right on our heels. And so every game counts. And they know that. They know that.
Yeah. Manny Myers Drysdale, the Hall of Famer, the on the Mount Rushmore of basketball for a few minutes with us chopping it up. You've seen Kevin Durant for a year now. It's just over a year since he came to the Suns. What strikes you most in watching his game up close night in and night out, that maybe from a distance you're like, he's really, I mean, he's amazing. But when you see it up close night in and night out, it's, wow, this part of his game is so good.
Well, his preparation. His preparation, watching him before games and been to some of the practices and just how hard he works and how focused he is. And I see that in Devin Booker too. And, you know, the great players are like that. And certainly every time he takes a shot, I never expect it to go out. Honestly, every shot he takes, you expect it to go in. And, you know, defensively, I think he's underrated as a defensive player. But again, I think with this team still trying to find the niche, which they're all trying to do. And, you know, I think Kevin would just as soon not take 20 shots. He's very much a team player. He shares the basketball. He tries to get his teammates involved. And sometimes we see that, you know, the Suns, they overpass sometimes because they are so unselfish. And that's a great quality, but sometimes it gets you in trouble too, that you've got to be a little selfish to take shots. And but Kevin Durant, I think, is he's a phenomenal player. He's so much fun to watch.
Let's move over to the women's side before I get you out of here. And when I hear all the conversation about Caitlin Clark, and it's the GOATs, and it's Nancy, and it's Cheryl, and it's, you know, and others, and your name is not the first out of mouths, I'm just screaming. My wife's like, what is your deal? Are you her publicist? Like, these people don't understand where she was and what she did. So I'm just wondering if you feel a little bit like when you're watching Caitlin Clark, like, guys, I'm over here. I did my thing. I know you're not one to seek it out. That's not you, as long as I've gotten to know you. What do you make of this?
It's a different time, social media and so forth. And I'm so happy for Caitlin Clark in Iowa and what they've done as far as bringing the women's game apart. But, you know, South Carolina's got a good game. And I think a lot of it started, too, with Iowa and LSU last year. You know, you've got to have a yin and a yang. Yeah. And Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark kind of brought that out. But you look at somebody like Pearl Moore getting attention now, who's in the Naismith Hall of Fame. And she is the all-time leading scorer with over 4,000 points in college. It gives light to the NCAA and how wrong they are in not recognizing AIW athletes, not just in basketball, but all over. Carol Blazejowski averaged 38.6 points at Montclair State her senior year with a regular size ball and no three-point shot. The fact that the three-point shot exists today is wonderful, but you look at Lieberman, you look at Cheryl Miller, who was just on the cusp of AIW, or I should say NCAA. But so many great players. And you don't even talk about Shamika Holzklaw or Tamika Catchings at Tennessee and Swin Cash at UConn and so forth. But, you know, the Immaculatas in Delta State, Lucy Harris at Delta State, who is, to me, is still the gold standard of a center. What Juju Watkins is doing and Halego and at Notre Dame, these two freshmen that have come in and really kind of taken over also. But it's given great attention to the women's game, which I'm so excited about. And the games have really been tremendous to watch. And the fact that TV is now putting games on TV and, you know, and that's special. But still, even with WNBA, you look at somebody like Diana Taurasi, who's probably in her last year and hopefully will make a sixth Olympic team. I feel so blessed to get to watch her every game of her career since I've been in Phoenix. And, you know, what a joy to call her games and see her work ethic. And, you know, I'm excited about the WNBA season and the Mercury this year. And just to be able to watch her and BG back and hopefully back in shape, and to see what she did last year to even play, being released from Russia, and, you know, it has the biggest heart and so forth. So we've got a new team this year, and I think the league is exciting. They're talking about adding new teams and so forth. So it's just growing because the talent on the college level is so good that we need more teams in the WNBA.
Yeah. May 14th, by the way, against Vegas is the season regular season opener for the Mercury. I can make the argument that the women's game in college is much stronger and more interesting than the men's game now. Men's game guys just go overseas. They go to prep school. They're one and done. There's not the storylines that we see. There's not the emergence. The Caitlin Clark on the men's side is gone. And I think, Annie, what happened with South Carolina and LSU, a little dust up. Everybody today, it's usually an NFL Monday in March. They're talking about suspensions and what's right and what's wrong. That's part of the news cycle that we're in this day and age with social media, as you referred to earlier. I just think there's a lot of momentum on the women's side that people may not be aware that it's coming. It's this tidal wave that I think is actually now breaking. It was just 4 years ago, they did that story on the women's weight room. Remember that? And they just showed like one bench at the NCAAs. They had like a couple box lunches over in the corner. It was embarrassing. And now,
I will say that the NCAA probably still is not in compliance with Title IX for women's sports, and not just basketball, but, you know, the weight room thing that Oregon brought out, but also, you know, lunches and dinners that the Final Fours get compared the men to the women. And, you know, it's disproportionate. But, you know, we just keep fighting. And we know that a lot of people that are in position of power that make those decisions on what they're going to air. You look at ESPN, SportsCenter, they could show more women's games. They could show more highlights during SportsCenter. They are a little bit more, but nothing like they do for the men. And but it's getting better. And no, there's no question that Caitlin Clark has raised that bar. And I think somebody like Dawn Staley also at South Carolina has done a tremendous job as far as bringing attention to the women's game and the players. And you look at somebody like Asia Wilson, who's come out of there, and Leah Boston, and now you've got so many other big names out of South Carolina. But I think throughout the country, what breaks my heart is that the Pac-12 will be disbanded. Yeah. And SC upset Stanford. It's not an upset, but they beat Stanford last night for the last Pac-12 tournament. And now they'll go into the Big Ten along with UCLA. So, you know, things change. We know that in the years to come, maybe in the next 5 years, that there's going to be, what, 4 or 5 power conferences, and that's going to be it. I mean, football has really dictated where sports are today, and so is betting.
Yeah. No question about the betting side. And you know, to the point on ESPN, they have the women's tournament. So if you're ever going to start saying, let's embrace and show more, now is the time, one. Two, the women's side, Stanford and USC, should be one seeds. Or you can make the argument that they're one seeds. And there's nobody out there outside of U of A that you could say is even close to it. The women's game is far deeper. I'm curious, when you watch games today, who reminds you of you, Annie? So somebody you're like, that's me back in the day. You're a Hall of Famer. You've done so many great things. You've been an advocate. But when you watch the games today, it's like, that reminds me of me.
I'm not a GOAT person. I never have been.
Nope.
That's like saying, who's the greatest hitter, baseball hitter of all time? Who's the greatest pitcher? Who's the greatest quarterback? Who's the greatest running back? Who's the greatest, you know, we're all playing in different generations. And, you know, I've never compared anybody to me. You know, because I was a pretty intense player. I played a lot like my brother David. Yeah. Who played at UCLA for Coach Wooden and played for the Milwaukee Bucks. But, you know, I love the game. I played on both ends of the floor. I get two things, you know, Coach Wooden, watching him play, where they didn't have the TV timeouts that they do today, but he hardly called timeouts, and timeouts were 1 minute long, and he only played 5 to 6 guys. So when I hear announcers saying, well, their bench isn't that deep, and I think to myself, well, you know, you play every 4 minutes, and then there's a like 2-3 minute timeout or 4 minute timeout. And how are you not in shape? You're 18 to 22 years old, and to be able to play 4 minutes and go. And to know that you don't really need that kind of a bench. And even in the NBA, the bench shortens up, right, when you get to the playoffs. Yep. I mean, you may play 10, 12 guys during the season because you need them because of injuries. But when the playoffs come, coaches shorten up the bench. And so, you know, for when I played, I get frustrated, too, when announcers say that they only shoot the ball or they only play defense or they only rebound. Well, they were pretty good players in high school and college and did everything. So a two-way player, that's what the game of basketball is. You play both ends of the floor, not just shooting. And the three-point shot has become such a weapon along with the dunk. So I get frustrated when people talk about the mid-range shot. And I love the mid-range shot because you look at somebody like Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, and you have a higher percentage of the shot going in, even though analytics will tell you, let's take the corner three, even though you're passing up a layup. And so the game has changed that way. And but I'm still about, you know, you play both ends of the floor.
Analytics drives you crazy or no? Just part of the deal, part of the game.
It's stats.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you had had the 3-point arc, you know, your range, would you have been setting records that today we're seeing out there? Would it have been a big advantage for you, Annie?
Well, I'm not going to say what if and this could have, should have, would have. I played when I played, and I'm very grateful. I think myself in women's basketball received a lot of attention at that time back in the 70s because of my brother David at UCLA, because of Coach Wooden at UCLA and the championships that they were winning. I was the first scholarship athlete, and I was on the first Olympic team in 76, and Billy Moore, who would be my coach when we won the championship in 78. You know, so all those things tie into not only getting recognition for myself, but also for the game of women's basketball. WBL, you know, being the number one draft pick in the WBL, which was the very first league in this country. And I think it was big as far as where the WNBA is today.
Well, and the Indiana Pacers, too. I mean, people, I just had to have you on because I've been losing my mind over this. Like, you guys are forgetting somebody who did all this, and she's right here in Phoenix, and she's doing it on a national level, and talking heads are talking heads. So I'll let you go on.
You've always been in my corner, Brad, and I appreciate it.
Stay well, safe travels, stay out of the snow. No snow angels.
That's right. Go Suns.
See ya. There's Annie Myers-Drysdale. We're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, it is time to chop it up with the great John Wilner. Wilner Hotline, you can find it on the site at sports360az.com, of course. And follow him on Wilner Hotline on X and other platforms as we work our way into the final days of the Pac-12. You found yourself laying there watching the ceiling fan spin around, John, and say, I can't believe it's all going away with conference tournament getting going this week on the men's side.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, it still seems a little bit surreal to me that this actually happened in a 109-year-old conference that is a bit of a college sports institution is going away as we know it, because it didn't have to happen. And you just, when I do that and start staring at the ceiling fan, I start thinking of all the mistakes that were made, all of the coin flips that ended up tails, and all they just needed one heads and everything would have been saved for over a course of 10 or 12 years. And then I think about the fact that, is it going away permanently? No, probably not. Right. I am of the mindset that by 2026, there's going to be a Pac-8 or Pac-10. Hmm. It's going to be, you know, with a bunch of Mountain West schools in Washington State and Oregon State. And we don't know about Cal and Stanford and the ACC situation, but look, in 1960, the thing broke apart. And then I think it was Washington, Cal, Stanford, and UCLA, USC and UCLA reformed, right? There was a huge pay-for-play scandal, and the thing busted apart in the late 50s. They reformed as what, the AAWU, I believe it was, in 1960. And then that gave birth to the conference that we've known for 60-something years. So this kind of thing happens, and there'll be something, but it's still surreal. And in a lot of ways, the Pac-12 basketball tournament is kind of the end of the chapter or the stage as we're paying attention, right? There's lots of spring sports, but those don't feel the same as football and basketball.
The documentary, if it's done, when it's done, on the demise of the Pac-12 as we presently know it.
Are we doing that one?
I'm thinking pretty hard about it, John, because I'm just like, I know I'm not going to get Larry Scott to talk. I know I'm not going to get George Kliakoff to talk. I know I'm not going to get Michael Crow to talk about, because I think he's culpable in this. Ray Anderson's culpable in this. There's like, I don't know how many people are walking out the door that don't have any remorse, but they have a huge bank account. Like, who profited most? Those are the names that I'm thinking of just off the top of my head. And there's more who just didn't care one bit. And we're so misguided and we're so blind. Who else walks away with a ton of dough on this and just doesn't care what they've torn apart?
Well, that's the thing, is where's the, you know, the accountability versus the impact, right? Who's impacted? Washington State and Oregon State, their employees, their athletes, their fans. You know, a lot of fans of the other 10 teams, there's a lot of people that don't want this to happen. But the decision makers don't really have any accountability. Larry Scott, all those mistakes, walked away with $50 million from this conference in his pocket over the course of 12 years. And no accountability. George Kliakoff, he's walking away with a nice settlement. No accountability, right? The presidents who are ultimately to blame. I mean, Michael Crow, he's still employed by ASU. He's doing just fine. Same with all the other presidents. So they, all these people make these terrible decisions, have terrible strategy, but they aren't impacted. The people who are impacted are the ones that really had no say in what happened, sure, which is part of the tragedy, right? And certainly Washington State and Oregon State did what they could to stave this off. But, you know, they are obviously going to be impacted immensely.
John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline. All right, so I'm going to get off the doom and gloom, but we had to throw it out there because it is the last week. They're going to be
in. Sure.
Yeah, you know, and I'm looking at the basketball side of it, and I don't know if a year from now I'm going to see very much improvement out of any of these schools going to these new conferences. You know, USC has a very good weekend. It looks like they're ascending. It looks like Colorado is ascending. It looks like U of A is being U of A, where they're just kind of up and down. And it just feels like this is going to be another one of those mid-March, hey, they're done. Guess what? It's now 25 years in a row. You're saying bear down, we're going to win it all, and you don't. And so, John, from your view, do you see where these schools, let's start with the Big Ten, the schools that are going to the Big Ten, Washington, Oregon, USC, UCLA, a year from now, are they in better shape for postseason basketball? Is their brand that much better?
I don't think so. I mean, I thought about that. It doesn't seem to me like that's going to be the case. You know, as far as from the basketball standpoint, the only winner is probably Arizona fans, because now they're going to get Kansas at home every year, every other year, whatever the Big 12 rotation is, you know, and they're going to get Baylor, and they're going to have some higher caliber basketball. Utah fans, now they're in BYU's conference, right? But otherwise, I don't think it's a huge competitive benefit for the basketball programs. And here's the piece of it, right? Football, if you're Arizona and you're going to play in a road game at UCF, or if you're ASU, you're playing Cincinnati, you're leaving on Thursday, you're chartering, you're back on Saturday night, right? UCLA football playing at Penn State, you're leaving on Thursday, you're back Saturday night. And you're doing three or four trips a year to the Eastern time zone. Manageable. But the Olympic sports and the basketballs, I mean, you're going to Cincinnati, and then you're going to Morgantown, West Virginia, and you're coming home, and then 2 weeks later, you're turning that around and going to, you know, wherever in the Central and Eastern time zone. That is the travel and logistics are going to be much more difficult in basketball than in football, because of the number of sports, the number of games, the frequency of travel back and forth. Football is the one that's driving the boat on all this, and it's impacted the least in terms of the travel difficulties.
Yeah, I mean, I think other than the television contract, you sit at home with a recruit and say, come here, you're going to have an opportunity. Yeah, you're actually going to be seen. Okay. I'm fine with that. It now has come out in those last few days since you and I spoke that there'll be football games on Friday nights. Friday nights used to be sacred in the Big Ten in this new contract.
Yeah.
Big 12. I'm sorry. Big 12. So Friday nights used to be sacred for high school. I'm kind of old school in that way. But I can totally see a path where Arizona State and Arizona in football are going to be saddled with some Friday night games. The markets aren't big enough. Phoenix is, but Tucson is not. This isn't disrespecting the programs. I can just see, like, the Pac-12 network used to just stick those two at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night for 6-7 weeks in a row. And you're just going, oh my gosh, can we get through this? So this deal that just came out about Big 12 and Friday Night Football, does it mean anything to you, or is it just get used to it? Eventually it'll be Tuesdays, Wednesdays.
No, it doesn't mean that much to me. I mean, they've been playing on Friday nights, right? The Pac-12 had a package. They would have, four or five conference games on Friday nights, mostly ESPN. What's different is that Fox is much more involved in the Friday night deal. They hadn't really been. They'd kind of left that to ESPN, but their changes in Fox's master programming schedule that are creating a hole on Friday night. That is the reason Fox went after Washington and Oregon, right? They knew that they were going to have Friday night football needs, and they wanted to strengthen the Big 10's Friday package. There's going to be a bunch of Friday games in Eugene and Seattle. I can tell you that. Big 12, same thing with Fridays. It's an open window. There's so few TV windows that aren't already filled for college football, but regular Friday nights is one of them for Fox. So, we're going to see it, and it's going to be a hard sell. I mean, especially in the major metropolitan areas, right? Getting to those stadiums on Fridays going to be very difficult.
John just released his what he believes the winners will be for the awards in college basketball. And with the tournament going on this week, I think U of A's lost to Oregon State. That's a quad three loss. That's going to be one that if they don't make the number one, right? Or do you think they're already out of being the number one overall seed in the tournament because of that, what happened in USC?
You know, I think that they still have a chance. They got to win the Pac-12 championship, and they probably need their competitors are Tennessee and North Carolina for that last number one seed. So Houston, UConn and Purdue are locks for the number one seeds. Arizona, North Carolina, Tennessee are kind of in a three-way fight for that fourth number one seed. I think Arizona's got a shot if those other two stumble and Arizona wins the Pac-12 tournament. But the other scenario, Arizona not winning the Pac-12 tournament and either of those two winning their conferences, I think Arizona is going to end up as the number two seed. And there's a significant difference. A lot more two seeds have lost opening round games, as Arizona can attest, than number one seeds have, for sure.
Women's side, are you looking forward to it more this year with the emergence of Caitlin Clark? Just how the games have gone, LSU, South Carolina scraping it up. John, do you think there's more interest in the women's side?
That was like an SEC football game with the little brackets. I think the women's side is continuing to grow. Clark, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing Juju Watkins, USC's freshman star, in the tournament. Pac-12 women's basketball is fantastic. They're going to get two number one seeds. They're going to get three. I doubt it, but it wouldn't be a shock. It is as good as the men's product is bad. The Pac-12 networks has done as much good for Pac-12 women's basketball as it's done bad for Pac-12 men's basketball, right? It's interesting how that whole thing worked, but certainly tons of interest in the women's game continuing to increase. They've got this new TV deal coming up that is going to, that kind of maximizes the interest in the product.
Yeah, I mean, Brink and Watkins, and there's actually stars that you can just point to and say, I want to watch this person. It's Sunday morning here in Arizona. It is 70 degrees and I could be out doing 1,000 things. And I'm like, no, I'm planted here watching Caitlin Clark. I can't get enough of her.
She's right. Well, and that's part of the difference with the men's game. The men, they don't have that because everybody's either off to the NBA or the developmental league or Europe or wherever after a year. There's so much turnover with the rosters. I mean, look, ASU's roster turns over completely every year, just about. Women have identifiable stars that stay with their schools, right? And that's really helping the product, and it's hurting the men. Men's basketball, college basketball, has got a lot of issues. I am of the mindset that they need to make major changes, or it's going to continue to get marginalized. The regular season is losing traction mm-hmm. by the year, the expansion of the NFL playoffs, the expansion of the college football playoff are going to squeeze men's basketball so that it's basically one or two weeks in February and then the tournament, right? That's not a sport. They need to make changes that will help interest in the regular season, which is the bulk of the scope of the product.
Yeah, no, that's well put. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Brad.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. Follow him on X and other platforms. The great John Wilner. And we're back with more after this timeout.